If you're referring into the two published books thus far, The Liberal Case Against Abortion and prior to that, They Shall Not Hurt or Destroy, I became vegetarian while in college, being raised in a Hindu-American family. When we would travel to India, we would live as vegetarians, so I was exposed to vegetarianism at a young age, and the whole moral issue of killing animals for food, clothing, sport, etc. And we had also been exposed to secular vegetarian literature as early as junior high. In the People's Almanac, in Diet for a Small Planet, Laurel's Kitchen, and other related materials as well that kind of drove home the point that, you know, eating meat is unnecessary. At a time in the 70s when people were speaking about grass-fed beef as an alternative to grain-fed to make grain available to feed the hungry, others were asking, certainly within the Indian community, why should people be eating beef at all? Why should we be killing cows or any animal for that matter? So I was exposed intellectually to the idea that it's wrong to kill animals at a young age, but it wasn't until I got to college that I became serious about it. The nuclear freeze movement was happening at the time. By becoming a vegetarian, I felt I was making a statement about peace and nonviolence. And it was common, even in the 80s, to find vegetarian groups on campus. There was an on-campus food co-op that had natural foods available. It wasn't strictly vegan. That wasn't pretty much on anyone's agenda at the time, but it was vegetarian, as was a local student-run vegetarian restaurant on campus, the Che Cafe, named after Latin revolutionary Che Guevara. A friend of mine from high school, Greg Sims, second youngest of seven children, raised in a devout Catholic family. His older sister, Claire, had become born again in the 70s. He was the one who got me interested in both religion and politics. He's the ultimate Jimmy Carter fan. As time grew on, he was the one who got me interested in religion and politics, and we found our only two real points of contention were reincarnation and vegetarianism. That was kind of motivated me to look into the religious arguments, because some people, they'll bring up the religious argument, and they're like, well, didn't God give us dominion over the animals? Didn't God command animal sacrifice? You know, what about the miracle of the loaves and the fishes? Doesn't Jesus sanction the killing of animals for food in doing that, et cetera, and so forth? These arguments would come up repeatedly. And they still do appear on PETA's website, for example, www.jesusveg.com. There's a question and answer section where, you know, Christians and people of other faiths can ask questions along these lines. And a lot of these questions do arise, and the staff over at PETA try to answer them as best they can. So these questions would naturally arise, and back then there were virtually no books on animals and theology to speak of during the first half of the 80s and everything. So I began doing the research along these lines, and I was inspired by an article that had appeared in the Los Angeles Times in 1985 by Russ Chandler of Los Angeles Times, November 1985. It was entitled, Churches Asked to Consider the Feelings of Animals, and it spoke about the formation of INRA, I-N-R-A, the International Network for Religion and Animals, which had been recently founded, one of the founders being Dr. Michael Fox of the Humane Society, who had a column, Ask Your Animal Doctor, and one of his columns he spoke about, he wondered if animals have souls, and he was saying the song of the humpback whale could be considered a sign that animals have souls, intelligence, etc., and the response he generated was, no pun intended, a response with that column, and a lot of it was very favorable, and he and another woman listed in the article as Ginny B, they had together founded the International Org for Religion and Animals and had brought a diverse coalition of religious communities on board, and said, of course, predictably, they were drawing ridicule from agribusiness, factory farmers, and so forth, and, you know, the animal exploitation industries. But it was interesting, because that was one of the things that helped spur me into action into compiling the arguments for, you know, why the religious communities ought to be on board with regards to animal issues. The book itself was a result of several years' worth of research. Even after that, it took me years to find a publisher. Finally, Steve Kaufman, head of the Christian Vegetarians Association in Cleveland, Ohio, was kind enough to publish the book. Steve is raised Jewish and converted to Christianity. He's with the United Church of Christ, a pro-choice Protestant denomination, and the Christian Vegetarian Association is like 4,200 members strong. He was kind enough to finally publish the book. Bruce Friedrich of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, he was kind enough to write the preface, and he came from the Catholic worker community and had joined PETA after finishing up his education, his bachelor's degree at Grinnell College in Iowa. So he wrote the preface. The late Janet Regina Hyland, author of God's Covenant with Animals, which is also available through PETA, she was kind enough to write the foreword, and I made it a point to distribute copies profusely. As I comment at the toward the end of the liberal case against abortion, you know, I see two parallel movements here, similar to those of like women's rights and civil rights. We have two causes: the animal rights campaign, which a lot of people think of, you know, a lot of, certainly in Christian circles, many Christians are unaware of the long history of animal advocacy and concern for animals within the biblical tradition. You know, not just often neglected passages within Scripture, but also the entire tradition of concern for animals. They're unaware, like four of the early church fathers wrote extensively on the subject of vegetarianism. The ones who immediately come to mind, Tertullian, Clement of Alexandria, St. Jerome, St. John Chrysostom, and there were others as well, St. Basil and others who written favorably of the subject and so forth. They're unaware. Dr. Holly Roberts, a Jewish scholar with a master's degree in Christian theology, published in 2004 her book, Vegetarian Christian Saints, which describes the lives and teachings of over 150 canonized vegetarian Christian saints. They're unaware that Protestant reformers spoke favorably of animals, Martin Luther and John Calvin, for example, and that John Wesley, the founder of the Methodist Church, was a vegetarian. They're unaware of the Quaker poets and pacifists and abolitionists who were veg-friendly and supportive of compassion for all creatures. And into the 20th century, Dr. Albert Schweitzer, a giant in Christian theology among theologians, spoke favorably of animals and so forth. And current trends in animal liberation theology, of course, you know, many Christians are unaware of this. Mainline Protestant, Catholic and Protestant theologians are addressing the issue. PETA was pleased when Father John Deere was kind enough to contribute a pamphlet, you know, about Christianity and animals for PETA, and they're hoping other Catholic priests would follow his example. And similarly, Baptist theologian Dr. Richard Allen Young authored a book in 1999 asking, is God a vegetarian? According to the Bhagavad Gita, the answer is yes, but without looking